Okay, so we're going to learn about this morning parashas Vahaloshcha.
What page?
We're going to start on page 794, the very end, the very last story of the parasha. This is a parasha that is packed with stuff. A lot of things going on from the beginning of the parasha, describing the menorah. We eventually get into some of the problems that the Jewish people are going to face, the beginning of their complaints, complaining about the man, complaining about lack of meat, some serious issues will take place. And then we have the very end of the parasha, the incident which you are all familiar with on some level, is the incident in which Miriam speaks Lashon Hara about Moshe. So, but let's actually learn it inside. Let's have the experience of actually going through the verses and seeing how that takes place, exactly what she said, and how it was responded to. So this is the very last story in the parasha. Again, as I mentioned, on page 794. We will do it in the method that we generally do. This is a little bit longer than usual. We're not going to get through it for sure, because the whole episode is about 16 verses, and we usually get through two or three. So we'll see how we do this this fine morning. So let's take the first three verses as a chunk, deal with them, and then we'll see how much ground we can cover after that. So the story begins at Pasuk Aleph, beginning of the 12th parak, chapter 12. Let's just read it through together. Vatadaber Miriam va'aharon v'moshe al odos ha'isha ha'kushis asher lokach. Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moshe regarding the Cushite woman he had married. Ki isha kushis lokach, for he had married a Cushite woman. So again, what I want to do is let's read all three verses together, and then we'll go back and just throw out all of the questions that you'd have that you'd like to look into as we go through. So that's verse number one. Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moshe regarding the Cushite woman he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. They said, was it only to Moshe that Hashem spoke? Harak ach be Moshe diber Hashem. Halo gam banu diber. Did he not speak to us as well? And Hashem heard. Verse 3, Pasuk Gimel, V'ha'ish Moshe Anov Ma'o. Now the man Moshe was exceedingly humble. Mikol Ha'adam Asher Al Pnei Ha'adamah, more than any person on the face of the earth. Here we have it. Three verses describing the opening episode. From this point on, for the last remaining 13 verses, are going to be the response to this episode, how Hashem is going to respond and react to this. And that's all that we have, these three verses as to what's taking place. Now, there are a lot of questions, so let's start with them. Let me just summarize what we have here. Verse 1, Miriam and Aharon speak against Moshe regarding the Cushite woman whom he had married, his wife. Their claim is, was it only to Moshe that Hashem spoke? He speaks to us as well. Hashem hears them. And Moshe is then described as exceedingly humble, Anov Mikol Adam. All right, number of questions. Let's start. Who wants to go first?
Okay. Cushite. He had married a Cushite woman. Is a repetition.
Excellent. We have this funny phrase at the end of the first verse. Why did they? What did they speak about? The Torah describes they spoke regarding the Cushite woman whom he had married.
What is a Cushite
woman? A woman from the land of Cush. Cush is Ethiopia, correct?
Oh.
It's referred to as a Cushi. The word Cushi comes up in... Now that reminds me, one of the rules? There's a line that runs through your Chumash. There's a top half and then there's a bottom half, right? You're going to put me out of a job if you look at the bottom half. But that happens to be correct. The word Cush is a land, Ethiopian. They are referred to very often in the Chumash, not so much. Certainly in the Gemara, often reference to people from the land of Cush, from Ethiopia. Generally a reference to having dark skin. Generally. So question number one on the table is, in the first pasuk, there seems to be this repetition as to what Moshe did wrong. Or at least what they were speaking about him, about what he did wrong. Moshe, and it says, Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moshe regarding the Cushite woman whom he married, for he had married a Cushite woman. He just told me that. Okay, that's going to be number one. That'll be one of those, in the phraseology of the time, why does it repeat that? What else do we have? Yeah?
Well, the third verse seems like it doesn't... Fit in
right.
Problem.
What does it do with anything, right? We're having a story about Moshe, and Miriam speaking about Moshe. We have a description of what it is that they said. Mm-hmm. And then Hashem hears. And then we all of a sudden go into Moshe's characteristics. So why is this here that Moshe was exceedingly humble more than any other person. Excellent. What else we got?
Well, they're questioning why he didn't speak to us as well.
Hashem? The he is capital. Did he not speak to us as well? Meaning they're saying Hashem speaks to us as well.
No, it's question mark. He spoke to Moses, but did he speak to us?
Right. Okay, you're touching on something, but you have to ask it more. There's a more basic way of addressing what you're touching on.
I'm sure this is not what you're talking about, but he's been married to this woman for quite a while, so wow.
Excellent. Fantastic. Okay, what happened? So let's start with what Elena is saying. Is like, I mean, he's been married for quite a long time already at this point. Now, we are already in the second year in the desert. Moshe left Egypt almost 60 years before coming back. We don't know how long it was from the time that he left that he got married. The way the Torah describes it was fairly soon thereafter. But even if we'll disregard those first 60 years, it's been at least a year since they left Egypt that they've been together. Why all of a sudden now are they complaining? Now there's a more fundamental problem with both of you are touching on that you haven't yet said, rather than why are they complaining. What's the more fundamental question as to what their argument is? What is their argument? What are they complaining about?
We don't really know.
It seems like they're trying to discredit Moshe.
There's a much more fundamental discredit him by doing what?
Did they want to be asked?
By what?
They're speaking against him.
That what? What did he do? What are they saying?
Well, he separated from him.
Whoa, that doesn't say that anywhere. That's what I'm asking. How do you know that? No, that's what we're doing.
I've heard that before.
And you're not wrong. You're not wrong. What we're going to do is we're going to learn the Chumash and see where are the missing pieces of information and where and how are they filled in. What do they say? What's Miriam and Aaron's complaint against Moshe? Miriam spoke against Moshe regarding the Cushite woman he married. For he married. So somehow we're starting that it was regarding this woman.
Are we equal to them?
And is there a reason why we're assuming we're not equal to them? What are the words they say? Was it only to Moshe that Hashem spoke? He spoke to us as well. Okay. Is there any reason why there is any discrepancy or disparity between what Moshe and his wife Tzipora and if you just have to explain, if you only had these verses and someone said to you, what did they complain about? What did they have to say derogatorily against Moshe? What did they say?
Is it because he married a convert?
Okay.
I wonder if a
Cushite
has to do with anything.
Okay, what is it? Who cares if she's a Cushite woman? Why is that relevant? I have an even more fundamental problem than that. Who knows who Moshe's wife was? Tzipora. Who is Tzipora?
Yisro's daughter.
Good. Yisro's daughter, right? That was the story where Moshe runs for the first time from Egypt. He runs to, where did he run to?
Midian,
right. He runs to Midian. And he runs into a bunch of shepherds making fun of some women, causing them all sorts of problems. Moshe saves them. Whole incident there with the rock and the well and the water. And they go home and they tell their father, Yisro. And Yisro says to them, here's a suitable young man. You just let him walk away. Go get him back here. Let's feed him and see if he'll marry one of you. Which is what happens. They feed him and he marries one of them, Tzipora. Where was Tzipora from?
Midian,
correct. Correct. How does the Torah describe her? Okay, so a more fundamental problem, other than the fact that we have, like, why is it relevant to us that she's Ethiopian? She's actually not Ethiopian. She's from Midian. She was a Midianite woman. She was the daughter of Yisro, who was the priest of all of Midian. I don't even know that she ever stepped foot in the land of Cush. So we have, let's summarize, let's try to put in a little bit of what we have here. Let's start back.
What makes it Lashon Hara, the fact that...
Okay, is she speaking Lashon Hara because she's saying she has dark skin like she's from Cush? Is that the big Lashon Hara that all of a sudden they're taking a very fair-skinned woman and they're saying, look at her, she has black skin. Unlikely. But was that the Lashon Hara? Is that what they were saying against Moshe? That look, she wasn't. She was fair-skinned like anybody else. She was from Midian. We don't have any reason to assume that she was actually with black skin. So let's just summarize what we have here. Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moshe regarding the Cushite woman he had married. So something that they said was clearly in regards to he and his wife regarding this Cushite woman, for he had married a Cushite woman. Now, we got to deal with the fact that we keep calling her a Cushite woman and she wasn't. That's one of the bigger, we like little questions and big questions. That's going to be one of the bigger questions. Like, why do we keep calling her a Cushite woman? So somehow, they are speaking out against Moshe because of the fact, something to do with the fact that he's married to this Cushite woman. Because that's who we married. We don't know what it is that they're bothered by yet. The Torah does not tell us at this point. Okay. They said, verse 2, we get into they said. Who did they speak to?
Each other.
Except that Hashem heard the next thing.
Okay, well, that's not going to be such a difficulty, right? That Hashem heard. Okay, so they said. Now, the Torah doesn't tell us who they said to. What are the options?
Each other.
Or?
Other people.
Okay, let's get out of all the options. I only had two. It's always great. You know, how many options are there? The Torah doesn't tell us who they said this to, right? It just says, they said. So who do we imagine was on the receiving end of these words? So our options are, so far we've had to each other. This is Miriam and Aharon having a meeting behind closed doors, speaking about Moshe. Good. So that's option number one, that they spoke to each other. Option number two would be, they said it to, 1 second, you get number three, they said it to Moshe. They had some complaint. They brought Moshe into their closed door meeting and they said, Moshe, we need to speak to you. Option number three would be, Lucy, what do you think?
Crowd.
They spoke to a crowd. Now, the Torah does not deem it necessary at this point to tell us who they spoke to. Any other options, by the way? I mean, that pretty much covers it, right? They spoke to each other.
They spoke to Moshe. It would have been Moshe and her, if they would have been talking to him.
Excellent. Right? So we have them speaking to each other, which also would be Lashon Hara, even though Moshe wasn't there. We have, they could be speaking to Moshe, or they could be speaking to a crowd. Which would be the worst out of all of those?
The crowd.
Right, the crowd, for word, right? That's for sure. That would be the worst. That would be, you know, whatever it is exactly that they're saying, and we really still don't know exactly what it is their complaint is, that would for sure be the worst. If they were speaking to Moshe, what would be the purpose of their talk? Let's say they were saying this to Moshe. What would be the purpose of it? Right? It would seem to be that they had some complaints and they wanted him to change it, right? So if they're speaking to a crowd, then it's really pretty sinister. Then it's them just spreading bad things, and then that would be the worst way to look at this. If they're speaking to Moshe, then what they were doing is they would have had a specific agenda in which they saw a problem and they wanted Moshe to address it. If they were just speaking amongst themselves, how would we understand that?
A plot.
It would either be a plot. Maybe they were trying to figure out if it was so bad. We'd have to work. They clearly would have had some complaint. I guess it would be a matter of them trying to figure out what to do. I'm just throwing out the options, right? I'm just reading the Chumash. Chumash says they said. Didn't tell me who they said it to. Those are my options. Those are how we would sort of address what it is they're saying. Yeah.
They're really just making an observation.
Okay. In other words, right now, let's see their words. Okay, but that's fair. No, they haven't actually said, you know, there's like action items when you go to a meeting, like you talk and talk and talk, and then someone says, okay, what are our action items? We don't have an action item here. We really just have an observation. What is their observation? Let's read that now. Was it only to Moshe that Hashem spoke? Did he not speak to us as well? Now we stop and say, well, what does that mean? So on the most basic level, what are they basically saying? Someone said it earlier.
Are they not equal to Moshe?
We're equal. The words are saying, hey Moshe, Hashem doesn't only speak to you, He speaks to us as well. So whatever their complaint is, clearly Moshe is behaving in a way different from them, in a way that's regarding what?
Marriage,
his wife Zipporah, because that the Torah makes clear was that they spoke against Moshe regarding the Cushite woman whom he had married. And they basically say, hey Moshe, Hashem doesn't only speak to you, He speaks to us as well. So far, so good?
Yeah.
And Hashem heard. What do we do with that phrase? That's an odd phrase, right? What do you think that implies to you when it says, and Hashem heard?
They're in for trouble.
Okay, they're in for trouble. Okay, hold on to that thought. No, that's a more serious... Right, you may be saying that jokingly, but maybe you're not. Okay, right, they're in for trouble. What else? That's one idea. What else? What other ideas would imply to you, would that imply to you when it says, and Hashem heard?
Some action that's
going to
be required.
Okay, that would be similar to what Dana is saying, that they're in trouble.
There's everything anyhow.
Right, correct, exactly, right? The focus, right? Well, Hashem hears anything anyway. Was there any thought in anyone's mind here that maybe Hashem didn't hear? Did anyone really think that maybe they said it quietly enough that he didn't hear?
No.
Right, that's not an option, right?
No.
So he was going to hear anyway. So then what's added when you say, and he heard?
He was angry.
Yeah.
Okay, it's similar.
Attention right. To that particular issue.
Okay, there's one other potential, or maybe there's more than that. There's at least another one that you're all focusing on the same approach, that he heard, meaning he took note and he was angry.
Often when we read that Hashem heard, then Hashem usually does something after.
Okay, meaning again, all the same. It's all touching on that same idea that this is a phrase which is letting us know he took note, he heard, and he was going to move into action. Yeah.
But they're right, raising this issue, does Hashem listen to them or speak to them? And it immediately says that Hashem heard their... I mean, they're raising an issue of, are they being treated equally or something? And it's immediately saying that Hashem heard their complaint. And then there's a statement seemingly from Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in a sense, it's sort of showing some response to them.
Okay.
That they're claiming that Moses is above them, but then it's giving them a direct response, or at least it's giving us.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. That's correct. That is correct. Let me just go back to this. And Hashem heard. Sometimes you're in a crowd of three people. And someone says, did you hear that? And someone says, I heard it. So if I could say, I heard it, sometimes what I'm saying is to the exclusion of everybody else. Right? What's a way of looking at it? It says, and Hashem heard. The other way of looking at it, you all are taking the approach of, oh, he heard and he's going to get him. That's true. We're going to see that. There's another aspect of, and Hashem heard, meaning but...
Nobody else heard.
Correct.
Yeah.
But no one else heard. Right? In other words, we were discussing, who did they speak to? Did they speak to a crowd? Did they speak amongst themselves? Did they speak to Moshe? So the verse concludes their actual words. Was it only to Moshe that Hashem spoke? Did he not speak to us as well? And Hashem heard. Implication, potential implication. Now, it could be that both of these thoughts are true. That he heard and no one else heard. That this was, it wasn't that Moshe and Miriam, and Aharon were running through the camps yelling and screaming. They were having a conversation either amongst themselves or maybe with Moshe, but certainly not to anybody else. It was Hashem and only Hashem who heard this. Potential. Like that? Don't like it? Possibility. Leave it as a possibility at least. Okay, let me throw, yeah.
But Moshe obviously wasn't there, because why would they speak to him in third person? If he were there, they would have said, wasn't only
good.
You there.
So I threw out a question, who are they speaking to? So we're looking for clues. So a clue of, in which they say, Harak Ach B'Moshe, it would be, you know, we like to speak in third person, but we don't usually find that in the Chumash, where Aaron, Miriam, and Moshe would speak that way to each other, where they would speak to him. It would sound like they were speaking to each other about Moshe, and Hashem heard, but nobody else. So those clues would point to, at this point, that they were speaking only amongst themselves, nobody else heard, and Moshe himself wasn't even there. Now, there's an advantage to us understanding Moshe being there, which I mentioned. What's the advantage if Moshe was actually there? It is still Lashon Hara, but it's a lot less. What's the agenda if Moshe's there? It's an action item. With Moshe, this is the problem. Do something about it.
Yeah.
The clue that you're pointing out right now is that the fact that it says they spoke and they use the word Moshe, does Hashem only speak to Moshe? It seems like they're speaking to each other. Moshe's not even there. Hashem here is only Hashem, not even Moshe. Then they're just talking amongst themselves. it would still be at a planning stage of we need to do something about it, but they haven't even addressed this directly to Moshe yet. In other words, it just would come out. Now, what's the order of our speakers in this verse? Or I'll phrase it like this. Look at verse 1, and then look at a little bit later, which we haven't read, but just scan verses 4 and 5 and tell me what you notice. I've already given you the hint what to look for.
Oh, Miriam is before Aaron in the first verse, and then Aaron is before Miriam in the fourth verse.
Okay, what about 5? Good.
Aaron before Miriam.
So two of the three verses, Aaron goes before Miriam in verses 4 and verses 5, and in verse 1, Miriam goes first. Which one, if you had to choose, who would you put first? Just in general, I mean, if you ever had to list Aharon and Miriam, who would you put first?
Who was older?
Aharon. Miriam was older.
Alphabetically, Aharon would go first.
Okay, now, does the Torah generally list alphabetically? Is that a method that the Torah uses? Okay. So generally, that's a fair way of not offending everybody. What method does the Torah generally use?
The oldest man first.
Okay, so it would either be a man first or it would go based on stature. We often find lists determining stature. In this situation, who do you think would have been listed first?
Aaron
would probably have gone first. Now, Miriam was a prophetess. I'm not taking anything away from Miriam. But in the list, it would have been Aaron and Miriam. So two of these three verses would fit with our assumption. That would be the fact that Aaron is listed first in verses 4 and 5. But in verse 1, who's listed first? Miriam's listed first. And there's another oddity in verse 1, which you'll never pick up on if you're reading the English translation, which is why we use Kumashim that have both. How does anyone recognize the phrase? How do we say, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, a very common phrase. What's that word that's used when Hashem speaks to Moshe? I don't know the Hebrew? Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe leimor. It's a common phrase. Vayidaber Hashem. Vayidaber with the yud means, and he, masculine, spoke to Moshe saying. What is the phrase, the first word of our verse? Vatidaber. Is that masculine or feminine? That's a feminine usage of the word to speak. And she spoke. Vatidaber Miriam ve'aharon. The way the Torah describes it is, and in a feminine way, even though it's describing Miriam and Aharon speaking together, the Torah describes it using a feminine form of the word, and she spoke, and it puts Miriam first. What does that tell us?
She spoke with Miriam, initiated.
Miriam's the initiator here. Now, Aaron's clearly participating. The Torah puts him together. But when we're going to see some punishments being handed out later, later meaning probably in 3 years when we go back to this next year and we get actually back to the end of the story. But Miriam is clearly, the Torah hints in very small ways as to the roles that each one played. It puts Miriam ahead of Aharon here, and it uses the verb to speak in a feminine form, vatadaber. Now, there's two words in the Torah uses to describe speaking. Omar, vayomer, and vayidaber. What's the difference between when the Torah uses the word vayidaber and when it uses the word vayomer? So Rashi is going to tell us vayidaber is always harsh. Vayidaber is when you want to speak harshly, you have something significant, difficult to say, it uses the word vayidaber. Vayomer is always a lashon of either please, or with bakasha, tachnudim, with mercy, with rachamim. It's a lighter, easier language. And the word that's used here is vayitadaber, is with a harsher word. Okay, moving on. So the third proposal was we have this placement of Moshe being the most humble of all people. Now we have two options whether or not Moshe is here or not. Moshe was either present and they were speaking to him, or Moshe wasn't. The hint that we're pointing out right now is that Moshe probably was not there. And then the Torah would be describing that Hashem is stepping in and saying, and you need to know, readers, that Moshe himself happens to be the most humble of all people. And we'll have to see where exactly and how exactly that fits in. Okay, we have two options at this point. I will leave it up to you. We can go back and start answering some of these questions of the first three psukim. And that will for sure take up the duration of our time. And then we'll have learned three psukim. And then the rest of the story we could do another time. Or we can read through at least the rest of the story, raise a bunch of other questions, and then sort of have to wait till some other opportunity to answer some of them. What are you up for?
Answers.
Okay. Okay, so let's summarize what we have here. Answers, I only heard three responses. I'm assuming everybody else is silent acquiescence.
Go on, then that means you'll have to be here next year anyway.
Oh, then let's go on.
I have no response to that one. Other than a webcast. Okay. Okay, so we have here, Miriam and Aaron are clearly speaking against Moshe. They have something to say, the Torah makes that clear. What the Torah makes clear is that it's in regards to his wife. Yeah. The Torah doesn't tell us what, just told us it's in regards to his wife because he took a Cushite wife. Now that creates problems because she wasn't Cushite, she was actually Midianite. We don't know if she ever stepped foot in land of Cush. Yeah.
Did they both say the same thing?
Now, we have no idea what they said. Excellent question. It's clearly in the feminine. Miriam is placed first, and it's a feminine verb of, and she spoke. The word in the beginning of the second pasuk is vayomru, is plural together. It sounds like they both said the same thing, but that's an excellent point. Unclear. Unclear whether they use the exact same word. That's how the Torah presents it to us. So we have to understand exactly their claim is that they're equivalent to Moshe. Whatever their complaint was, hey, we are the same. Hashem also speaks to us, not just to Moshe. Hashem hears this. Now, hears this, which on the one hand we said probably could imply that he was the only one who heard. It also implies, as you all picked up on, that he heard this and took action and was ready to move, which means whatever it was that they said wasn't some, you know, innocuous, non-offensive remark. This was apparently something which was very troubling to him, and he took note of. I would mention a Gemara in Brachos, when you speak about Hashem hearing and that he takes note. The Gemara in Brachos has a fascinating discussion about whether or not one is allowed to speak Lashon Hara against somebody who has already died. Does it or is it not a problem to speak disparagingly against such a person? Well, that's a discussion. Part of the discussion goes as follows. The Gemara presents an opinion from Rabbi Yitzchak that someone who speaks about disparagingly against a dead person is as if he spoke about a stone. Meaning, the Gemara is not talking about whether or not it's permissible, but that it has no impact on the deceased. Once the person moves on to the next world, is like not bothered by the fact. We are very bothered in this world when someone speaks disparagingly against us. It's very painful. It's hurtful. We have to deal with it. The Gemara says, but once a person moves on, what continues to be said about him in this world, as far as the soul of the person who has moved on, is if you spoke about a stone, the person doesn't care at all. The Gemara presents two reasons why the person doesn't care. Some say the Gemara says, "Dilo yadi," they don't know what's being said about them. They're just not holding in the words that are being said in this world, so it doesn't bother them because they don't know. And others explain the Gemara, says the Gemara, that they do know, but that they don't care. Two approaches in the Gemara, whether or not someone who moves on simply doesn't care what's being said, or is in the world of truth, and it really just doesn't matter to them. The Gemara questions, wait a minute, that's not true. The Gemara records a story where someone spoke about Mar Shmuel, one of the great sages of the Talmud, after he had passed away. And the Gemara says, as soon as he finished speaking, a pole fell off the roof and killed him. So Gemara says, don't tell me that it doesn't matter. See, Hashem runs the world, it's still very, it doesn't work that way, you can't just, Gemara says, no, you can't bring a proof from there. Gemara says, a tzurva mirabbanon, a rabbinical scholar, a sage, one of the Talmidei Chachamim of the Gemara. The Gemara uses this language, kuchabrichu Hashem tava vikare, Hashem demands retribution for their honor. So you can't bring a proof for this. We're always having a discussion whether or not if a person moves on to the world of truth, whether or not they're still aware, or whether or not they still care about what's being said about them in this world. Maybe yes, maybe no. The Gemara has a couple of approaches. The Gemara says, but don't bring me a proof from that, because when you're talking about Talmidei Chacham, when you're talking about Torah scholars, it's not a proof whether or not they knew or cared. The reason why that didn't happen is because Hashem knows and cares when you speak about his scholars in such a manner, and therefore there's no proof to that. So one of the commentators, the Sfarno and Chumash, writes, Vayishma Hashem, that Hashem heard. What's it telling us that Hashem heard? So yes, it's telling us that he heard and nobody else heard. But it's also telling us he heard and he took notes. Why did he take note more about this than anything else? Because he references the Gemara, says the Sfarno, that when you speak disparagingly against a sage, and Moshe, lo kam b'Yisrael ki Moshe, nobody was like Moshe, you speak about Moshe, and Hashem's going to take note, and he's going to listen. So the Torah is telling us that Hashem was there, and he took note. Okay, and then we have the Ish Moshe, Anav Moed. So let's get some answers, yeah?
I have a question.
Sure, I'm up for more questions. Doesn't bother me. Yeah.
Did Hashem speak to Aharon and Miriam the same way he spoke to Moshe?
That's going to be the part that we're not going to do today. That would be the rest of the story. That'd be the rest of the story. In other words, what's the response? We haven't really uncovered what the problem is, and then we need to go through what the response is. So let's see how Rashi addresses this. Always go to Rashi first. Yeah. So Rashi points out a couple of things. Let's start with the most glaring of the question as to the fact that she was a Cushite, that she was described as an Ethiopian woman when we know in fact that she wasn't. So Rashi has a couple of comments on this. Rashi says, if you want to read it inside, it's five lines from the bottom, on the first column on page 794. Ha'isha ha'kushis, magid shehakol modim biyofyeha, kishem shehakol modim bishachruso shel kushi. This is to teach you, says Rashi, that everybody agreed to her beauty in the same way that everybody agrees that an Ethiopian woman has dark skin. So Rashi's first approach is that Cushis is coming to tell us something, that Cushis has certain qualities that are unarguable. If I say about a certain woman, she's beautiful, so someone next to me can say, I don't think so. Right? And then we can get into debate. But it's very hard for us to all agree upon, right? That's why we like these beauty pageants, because it's not agreed upon, that everyone gets to vote and they decide what they think is beauty, and beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and we all know that that's true. That painting is lovely. No, but there was anyone fly recently in Atlanta Airport? They have those ads from one of the financial things where they show like a puppy next to a pit bull, and they keep switching up. Like, you know what I'm talking about? Like pet, you know, monster pet. Like everyone can view the same thing in different ways. Someone's looking at a cruise, and one's present. Like they have the cruise versus a sailboat, and one is like vacation. You know, does that they whatever? I'm not describing them. Yeah, and some people look at it as, you know, the best thing in the world. Someone would not. And they say, we don't care. We'll get you there anyway. Like that's their ad. Whatever. So how do you describe a woman as beautiful? Guys don't fly enough. Or when you fly, you stay focused. So Rashi says, to describe her beauty in a way that everybody agree that she's beautiful, we borrow a trait from that which you can't really argue about. A woman from Ethiopia is going to have dark skin. So we call Tzipora a Cushis. Well, we know that she actually wasn't from Cush, she was from Midian. So in what way are we referring to her as a Cushis? So Rashi, in one approach, we're going to see a couple of others, says, oh, it's to tell you in the same way that a Cushis has certain qualities, which you can't argue on, the color of her skin, it's just a fact, it's just what it is. So Tzipora had a beauty that was unarguable. It just was, everybody who looked at her said, now that is a beautiful woman. That's the starting point. Continues Rashi, Cushis, Bigematria Yifas Mar'eh. Now Rashi doesn't often bring in Gematria. Gematria is the system of attributing a number, a numerical system to each Hebrew letter. Aleph is 1, Beis is 2, Gimel is 3, so on and so forth. Every letter has a numerical equivalent. And Gematria is the study of adding up the meanings of words and finding connections. Says Rashi, well, it just happens to be that the word Cushis for a Cushite woman happens to be the exact same numerical equivalent as Yifas Mara, of beautiful appearance. And then the Torah repeats, because he took a Cushite woman. Why does the Torah repeat that? Says Rashi. Ma Talmud Loimar, 3 lines from the bottom. Sometimes you have a woman who's beautiful, but only in appearance. On the externals, she's beautiful. But internally, regarding her characteristics and her behaviors, she's not so beautiful. Or you could have a woman who's beautiful in the inside, in terms of her behavior and her character, but she's not the most attractive on the outside. So why does the Torah repeat twice that he married a Cushite woman? That what they spoke about was the fact that she was a Cushite woman, and he took a Cushite woman. Why twice? Because she was not only beautiful on the outside, she was beautiful on the inside, and it was agreed upon by all in the same way that an Ethiopian woman is agreed upon and recognized as being of dark skin, so too did everybody recognize her quality. Fine. Now, why do we keep calling him a Cushite, though? That's a funny way to do that. So Rashi adds another level of why we would use that specific. Why don't we just say, just like the sun is bright, and everybody agrees the sun is bright, she was beautiful. Why do we use the fact that she has dark skin?
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Then it's really a compliment they were talking about. Miriam and Aaron talked about
the... Excellent. Okay, now that's really just, that furthers our other question that says, well, what did they say after? We're still missing what they said. All that we now know is that they were talking about the fact that he married this beautiful woman. She was beautiful on all accounts. Now, what you're correctly doing is really setting up what their problem is. They're saying, Moshe, you have a gem. You have a gem who's beautiful, beautiful on the inside, beautiful on the outside. And everybody here recognizes it. What are they setting up for? What must Moshe not be doing appropriately? Treating her well. Moshe, you married this Cushite woman. And we repeat that phrase twice. And Rashi tells us they're saying they're describing her beauty. Beautiful on the inside, beautiful on the outside. And everybody knows it. Well, what's their complaint then? Well, the dot, dot, dot must be, you're not doing something well. And then what are the words that they say? We're going to get to the point that you mentioned. You're right. I want to show you how the sages saw it. So let's just put this together. Right? We're complaining about her as a woman, about your marriage. We keep describing her as a gem on the outside and on the inside. And then the words that they say are what? We're just like you also. Hashem speaks to us. Implication being, Moshe, because Hashem speaks to you, somehow you're treating her differently than you should. But Hashem speaks to us also.
You shouldn't be treating her differently.
Correct. Now, what's the connection that we know about between Hashem speaking to somebody and marriage? We had this last week. When the Jewish people, this is the last class that we had, two classes ago maybe, when the Jewish people were at Har Sinai, and they were getting ready to receive the Torah. And if you remember, the dialogue went, for those who were here, and Moshe first comes down from the mountain on his second or third trip down, and he said, great news, guys, Hashem is going to speak to me through the cloud, and you'll know that he's speaking to me. And the people responded, and they said, no deal. We want to speak to Hashem directly. So Hashem says, okay, what's the next response?
Sanctify
yourselves, change your clothes, and
no marital
relations. You have to separate from your wives, because if you want to be a prophet, if you want to be ready to receive this prophecy, there's a certain level of tumah, of spiritual impurity, which is brought about through marital intimacy, and therefore in preparation for these 3 days, you need to separate. Everybody go to a mikvah, men, women, tahara, purity is going to be involved in the camp, and then Hashem will speak to you. So put together what Aaron and Miriam are now saying. You have a beautiful woman, beautiful on the inside, beautiful on the outside, except I'm a prophetess, says Miriam. Aaron, our brother, he's a prophet. None of us are required to live our lives regularly, separating from our wives. That's not part of the program of being a prophet. Prophets have children, and prophets are regular people too. Moshe, why are you treating her different? Now, if we were to go with this, which is what the Chazal are going to say, we're still missing something, because how in the world would Aharon and Miriam know that Moshe has separated himself? Now, there's one more hint, actually, in the Torah, which the commentators point out. The Torah repeats that what was the problem here? Miriam and Aharon spoke against Moshe regarding the Cushite woman who he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. They point out in the same way that we said, like when Hashem heard, it's the exclusion. Hashem heard, but no one else heard. When it repeats it and says it again, that you had married her, it's implying, but you're not now treating her as a married woman. Because remember the repetition. They spoke about Moshe regarding the woman whom he had married, for he had married her. What do you mean? We know that already. Implication being, that's the issue that they are talking to him about. You had married this woman, for you had married her, and are not now continuing to treat her in the way that she should be treated as a married woman. How would they know that? So Rashi comments from the sages. Then that would be an obvious thing if he just moved out. But Rashi doesn't say that. Now it might be the reason why he might not have done that might have been because then that might have either been humiliating to her or he didn't want to do that. But the sages didn't think that Moshe did that. What they point out is the following conversation. This is how the sages saw things. I just want to share that with you. If you flip back one page, the Torah describes, you look on the heading there on the left-hand side, there were new prophets. This is following the discussion of the lack of the meat, and Hashem sends the meat. And then what we had in verse 26, there were two men who remained behind in the camp. The name of one was Eldad, the name of the other was Medad, and the Spirit rested upon them. They had been among the recorded ones, but they had not gone out to the tent. They prophesied in the camp. Now this is a whole discussion, this would be another class. Bottom line is, these two people are prophesizing in the camp. The youth ran and told Moshe, and he said, Eldad and Medad are prophesizing in the camp. So that whatever that story is not for now. Two of the people, of the Jewish people, this named Eldad and Medad, had become prophets, and they were saying things in the middle of the camp. Now, when we get to that part of the story, we'll have to describe with the Gemara take, like, what were they saying? What was the big deal? Why are people running and telling Moshe? But not for now. Rashi records from the sages that Miriam was with Tzipporah, the women were hanging out, when the word got to Moshe that there were these two new people, Eldad and Medad, who were prophesizing in the camp. Says Rashi, what was Tzipporah, Moshe's wife's response when she heard that there were now these two young guys running around the camp as prophets? Says Rashi, her response was, Oy, l'neshoseihen shel elu. Oy, I feel so bad for the wives of Eldad and Medad. Because if they've now become prophets, and they're going to be prophesizing in the middle of the day through the camps, they're going to have to separate from their wives. So Tzipporah let out a groan when she heard about these two people. Like, why is this right here? In other words, someone asked the question, I forgot who it was, that said, they've been married for a long time, Moshe and Tzipporah. Why all of a sudden now do we have this problem? Well, it's because the most previous story described in the Chumash is of these two young guys, Eldad and Medad, prophesizing. So the sages connected it and said, well, what would that have to do with anything? Just because, why is this connected here? So this, because when the word got back, Tzipporah let out a groan and said, oh, I feel bad for their wives, that now they're going to have to be separated from their husbands. To which Miriam says to Aaron, says, we got to do something about this. This is inappropriate. You and I are prophets. We've never been told that we need to separate. Why should it be that Moshe's behaving in this way when we don't have to behave in this way? So their claim, Aaron and Miriam, is that we are the same as Moshe. We've never received any instruction that we need to do this. And Moshe is clearly doing something inappropriate. So his wife, who is a gem, who is wonderful on the inside and wonderful on the outside, why should she be treated this way? So now, we spoke about this once before also. Rashi points this out as well. What was the agenda of Aharon and Miriam here?
To bring Moshe down. It's a sort of, if you're putting yourself above us and making yourself so holy that you can't engage in normal human behavior, then, you know, by implication, okay, you're lower than you are.
So they're trying to bring him back down in the sense that they should be equivalent. A nice thought. I think it's fair. Rashi says that he has a different take on it in a more positive light. No, that's certainly a way to do it, to say it or to have seen it. Rashi sees it in a positive light in which they were really standing up for the defense of Tzipporah. That why should she be mistreated? So it wasn't that they were specifically out to get Moshe, more in the sense that they wanted Moshe to treat Tzipporah a little bit more appropriately. And Rashi comments, if someone who speaks Lashon Hara and does so in such a manner where their agenda is not to be derogatory against Moshe, but to right what they understand as a perceived wrong, how much more so, says Rashi, the type of punishment and the way that Hashem will treat those who speak Lashon Hara and what they do have in mind is something derogatory about the person to whom they're speaking, about whom they're speaking. We don't necessarily even see that Miriam and I were trying to be derogatory against Moshe, but they were trying to correct a wrong. And yet we see that, how much more so when we actually do speak Lashon Hara and the intent is to be derogatory.
What about the statement that in defense of Moshe that he is the most humble of all?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, how does that fit?
Let's get to that. Let me share a Ramban. The Ramban has two things to say on that. The Ramban says as follows. Listen to these words. I will translate them because he's going to say two separate things. Moshe was the most humble of all. Lehagid, this is to tell us, ki Hashem kanalo, that Hashem was vengeful for him. Hashem was jealous, so to speak, for Moshe, ba'avor anaf sanuso, because of or on account of his humility. Ki hu lo ya'ane al rivli olam, he would not get involved in a fight ever. Af im yada, even if he knew. Listen to it. Think about what the Ramban is saying. Now the last phrase, af im yada, even if he knew. The Ramban in his first approach, did Moshe know about this conversation or not? No. That would be going with the hint that you picked up on before, that they speak to Moshe in the third person. So who's speaking? Miriam and Aaron. Who are they speaking to? Each other. No one else is around. Vayishma Hashem. Hashem heard. Nobody else. Not Moshe. Not the people. He takes action. Why does he take action? That's the next verse, because Moshe was so humble. He was filled with such humility that Hashem defends him and says, people like that, I will get in and defend them. Even though he had no idea. So the way the Ramban is reading that pasuk, it's not describing that Moshe didn't get involved in the fight out of his humility. That's not what the Torah is describing. The Torah is, on this, as a sidebar, saying, this is the person about whom you're speaking. He is the most humble of all people. You're just speaking in a room. He doesn't even know that this is going on. He has no idea that it's taking place. I, because of my great love for Moshe and his humility, will step in and deal with it. That's Ramban's first approach, which would present us with that scenario of the two of them speaking together behind closed tent doors, trying to figure out a plan to take action. Moshe has no idea what's going on. Hashem steps in because of his love of Moshe, because of Moshe's humility. Then the Ramban quotes from a Sifri, who writes, Af b'fanav shel Moshe dibro bo. No, they spoke before Moshe, in front of him. Shene'emar, as the pasuk continues, Vayishma Hashem v'ha'ish Moshe anav me'od. It's not an explanation why Hashem stepped in because of his love of Moshe, because of his humility. It's a description of why we need Hashem to take over, because Moshe himself will not do it for himself out of his humility. Shekavash Moshe, Moshe held himself back, and that's why we refer to him as Anav Mikol Adam, which would be a very different definition in terms of the usage of humility here. The second explanation that the Ramban gives is, it was a quality of his humility that allowed him to be in the face of having someone speak about him and not say anything. And that's how the Torah, that's why the Torah puts it here. It's an explanation as to why he didn't, what should Moshe have said? Is there anything, is there a response for their complaint? Yes, no? Well,
maybe you're right. I should be treating him better.
So the answer is that you don't know, because we only did the first three verses. If we would have done the next couple of verses, we will basically find that Hashem is going to describe and say, Moshe is not a prophet like you. You are right in your understanding of prophecy. The type of prophecy that you experience, one is not required to abstain from regular married life. But Moshe is not like you, and I actually told him that this is how he needs to behave. That's what Hashem is going to respond to them. And Rashi is going to quote the actual reference in the pasuk back in Har Sinai, which we studied Shavuos time, in which Hashem in effect tells Moshe to behave this way. And that's the response. So there's sometimes you have something which is said against you, and it's totally defendable. There's a reason why I'm doing this. I was in fact told to do this. And yet Moshe doesn't respond. He doesn't say, no, don't you understand? Hashem told me this. So it's interesting to note in the two approaches of the Ramban, how that plays itself out. In the first approach of the Ramban, was Moshe present when he heard this?
No.
Why didn't he respond and explain himself?
No.
In the first approach, why didn't he defend himself?
He didn't know about it.
He wasn't there. Would it have been in any way against his form of humility had he said, no, Hashem told me to do this? Not necessarily. He didn't speak up because he didn't know anything about it. Hashem explains to us in the Torah why he gets involved and he takes up the issue. He says, because Moshe is so humble, because of his humility, I'm going to step right in and take care of this right now. But Moshe doesn't respond himself because he doesn't know about it. In the second response of the Ramban, the second approach of the Ramban, when they said this complaint, Moshe was there and he still didn't respond. Now, why would his lack of response be a form of humility? Here he is, he's doing everything right. Right? Hashem told him to behave this way. He's behaving in this way. Someone complains and says, Moshe, you're not behaving correctly. What should he have responded? I was told to. And the Torah, according to the second approach of the Ramban, says, why does he not say that? Because of his humility. Why is that a humble response, not to defend yourself in a way which is totally appropriate to defend yourself by saying, I'm doing exactly what Hashem told me? Why would that be a form of humility? Right, that's what I think the answer is.
For yourself.
And the way that he's speaking up for himself would be by saying, I am so much greater than you. The reason why Hashem told me to behave in this manner is because I received prophecy different than you. There is no other prophet like me, and that's why. So in his humility, was unable to come up with a way of saying that that wouldn't sound the opposite of humble. So he didn't say anything, and therefore Hashem has to step in. Those are the two approaches that the Ramban has, whether or not Moshe was actually there. Either he wasn't even there at all, and Hashem steps in because of his love of Moshe, because of his humility, or then he may not have even been there at all, and Hashem, the other approach is that he was there, and it was as a result or because of his humility that he does not want to get involved at all.
Did Sephora know that God had instructed him in this fashion?
That's a great question.
If she's saying,
that's a great question.
You know,
yeah, that's what I. Why would he have told her?
Now, do we know that to be true? What are our options? Our options are either yes or no, right? So let's talk them out. Either Zipporah has no idea what's going on. When Moshe received the pasuk that Rashi is going to refer to as the source that he was told to do this is a pasuk that he was told to on Har Sinai. So she was clearly not there. So either he related to her, or it just came out of the blue and all of a sudden he's separating himself from her. So without one reason to assume one way or the other, I don't have any reason. I would assume he told her. That's my personal feeling. I don't have any reason to assume not that way. And then her groaning would be assuming that just like she was told, so she would say about Eldad and Medad, now that they're prophesizing, I don't have a reason to assume that this was like she was held in the dark about this. It just was, you know, that this is a requirement of being married to the greatest man who ever lived. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean she enjoyed it, just means that that was part of it. Now, we don't even know how long, if it was all 40 years in the desert, if it was during specific stages, I don't know whether or not, how it was. They clearly had children together, that was before they got to it, that was still while they were in Midian. I don't know. But this is really just the introduction. This is just the first three of the 16 verses. This is just what their issue was and what they said. And now we have to get to Hashem's response, which from his response we learn really a lot more about what was going on. But this is the introduction of what it was that they said, why it's placed here, that Rashi addressed. The reason why this is here is because of the fact that the most previous story was about the two new prophets. The hint of Miriam being placed before Aharon, who's the only one who's going to get Saras at the end of this story, is going to be Miriam. Aharon does not get Saras.
Why?
So that's from the hint of the fact that Miriam is placed first, and the verb describing the speaking is the feminine verb, implying that she was the one doing the bulk, or certainly initiating the conversation. And we have this language of Vayishma Hashem, Hashem taking up the issue, and that he was the only one who heard. So it seemed like it was a private thing, which really minimizes the extent of how bad their Lashon Hara was. It was only being spoken between the two of them. And yet we're still going to see the response that we are eventually going to see. Okay, just not this year.
Fundamentally, this portion is talking about acceptance of roles. Each one of them, and Miriam and Aharon, unwilling to accept the roles that they've been assigned, or looking over their shoulder to see if their role is similar.
Okay, again, it's possible, I'm only saying, because of the fact that they were not told the distinction, so there's another way to look at that. Notice Miriam and Aaron, again, you're viewing it the same way that you did before, that it was an attempt, it was almost getting back at Moshe, it was not accepting their role as lower level prophets. They didn't yet know they were lower level prophets. Hashem is about to explain that to them, that the form of prophecy that they receive is not like the form of prophecy that Moshe receives. In other words, you'll never know that somebody actually thinks different than you, because How do you know how they think? Right? You've never experienced their thought process. So for all you know, their thought process is exactly like yours. They just have different sets of thoughts, but you'll never know qualitatively how different it is. Like I bring this example very often. We'll never know how cows think. Right?
No. Right.
Because our ability to think about it already disqualifies us from being a cow. So I don't know. So I can only assume that all people, at least, okay, I know that, but at least I'll assume that all of you think qualitatively the same way that I think. Because I don't have any other thing to go on. So they, as prophets, didn't have I'm blanking on the word that I'm looking for, to go on to understand how his prophecy was like, and therefore they couldn't understand why he's different. So I don't know that it just was a lack of acceptance of roles until the roles are laid out.
Well, but up until this point, they've already had different roles
right.
in Jewish history.
Correct.
So by the evidence tells us something about their different roles.
Roles, yes, but not necessarily a different quality of a prophet, which would have, in other words, it's a possibility what you're saying. I don't know that it has to be that way.
I'm sorry, I know it so negatively.
That's fine.
It just seems that way.
All right, have a wonderful...